we humans have been up against that problem of destruction, of the end of the world, of Armageddon in our own small way, and needing to send somebody out to survive. So it is, you know, much as I'm a scientific thinker, and there is no evidence that we came from elsewhere, unless you read Eric Von Däniken and you're really seriously into it. One way or the other, it is entirely possible that we were sent here by another people who learned to fly, but at some point, the notion of flying originated, and it's been around, well, if the dinosaurs had it, then it's been around for a long time. If birds have had it, then it's been around for a long time. What advantage do we have over birds when it comes to what we can accomplish for this teaspoonful of biomass I talked about 4 billion years ago? We're the only ones who can fly life beyond the atmosphere.
Well, that's true.
We're the only ones who can take entire ecosystems into space and do exactly what Jim has been talking about, put up giant glass and steel cans in the sky that are big enough to house 30,000 humans or 3 million humans, have them rotating with artificial gravity, having them take advantage of all the sunshine you can imagine, and growing parks and forests and farms and trees and hills, bringing greenery to space. I would love to garden space.
Would you go?
If there was enough greenery up there, I would very seriously consider going, because I just love green stuff, and that's what's missing from space right now.
Jim, tell us a little bit more about the plan to construct this huge housing network up there.
Well, the idea is the making a tube out of plastic or hydrocarbons is very simple. We do it all the time. There's all types of tubes. I once worked in a small cottage industry in the space program where we took basically 2-liter Coke bottles. We started with those and got the bigger ones that you would take a plastic form and wrap carbon fiber around it in prepreg carbon fiber and make a bottle. And then you put a cap in it, and these bottles were used, and they're still used all over the space program, and now they're making big ones. But basically, all of these materials are available in outer space. But with the comet effect, you can gather them from the vastness of outer space, into a locale, manufacture them. You can make tanks. You can gather water. You can split the water into hydrogen and oxygen. And basically gather your materials in outer space. But the idea is that no matter where you are then in the solar system, you get hit by a micro asteroid and one of your tanks gets devastated. Well, you can take that material, recycle it, maybe add a little bit more, and you're constantly working to gather more material and build more, adding these like Tinker Toys into a larger city as your city grows. But basically, as I said, we have to learn how to live out there. We can't have this concept of everything's got to come from Earth. In fact, nothing, absolutely zero, nothing can come from Earth.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about how the ISRU community supports you. The basic concept of the in-situ resource utilization community is you've got all of the raw material for glass and steel you need on the moon. And you have very little gravity to fight to get it off of the moon. So you throw a whole bunch of lunar regolith, of lunar rock, into orbit, and you have so much glass, steel, germanium, everything that you could possibly need, that it's absolutely ridiculous. And from that, you can not only make these giant tin can-like glass and steel structures that are called O'Neill colonies, the colonies that will house between 30,000 and 3 million people, but you can also get the raw material to make your own soil. All you need to do is bring your own bacteria up there, and we bring our own bacteria wherever we go, because you've heard me say this before, George, but your body, Jim, and mine are 100 trillion cells, and 50 trillion of those cells are bacterial colonies. So put just one of us in orbit, and you've put the beginning of an ecosystem in orbit, and you've put the beginning of what can make soil and parks and greenery and trees into orbit.
That's a good point, because we have to take the things that our immune systems fight. If we went up and, say, produced this completely sterile environment, we could live there, but then we'd lose our immune systems, and that's something that's very important for our long-term survival. So we actually have to bring germs up so that we maintain our immune systems.
And you'll bring them up one way or the other with you, because the bacteria colonies in your gut make your vitamin P, they make your vitamin K, they digest an awful lot of your food for you. and they garrison your system against invading bacteria, enemy bacteria from outside. So as I said, when we were there, we put you, Jim, in space. We've automatically got you plus tens of thousands of bacterial colonies with between 50 and 500 trillion bacteria in space just for the cost of getting you up there. And that's the problem. There's the problem. Now, how would you solve this? The big problem right now is that it costs $14,000 a pound to get stuff into space. Now, we know we can solve that by getting the materials from the moon, from asteroids, and from comets. But in the beginning, when we have to get humans out into space, how do you get the cost down?
Well, that's exactly the point, too. And I talk about that in the book, that you initially start manufacturing the tanks on Earth. You can spirit them up in two ways. You could either use, actually, the Russians developed this propulsion system. It's, remember when you were a kid and you had the water rocket and you pumped it up?
Oh, yes.
Put the pressure in, and they went shooting up into space. Well, you can do the same thing, except instead of coming out the back end in terms of just air pressure, you send it through a nuclear cell and you change it into steam. So you basically have the same thrust as you do with a oxygen-hydrogen engine. And so basically you would spirit these big tanks that really wouldn't weigh that much up into outer space, or you could carry them up. You could design an aircraft, that's another idea, with wings and take it up to maybe 60 to 80,000 feet with jet engines, then release them, and then they'd go up the rest of the way in the thinner part of the atmosphere.
Just jettison
with a chemical,
them off.
Yeah, with a chemical booster. That chemical booster would fall down, you would reuse it, and we would just make these big plastic tanks. Once you get them up there and you get a housed population and the equipment to start the comet effect, which is the gathering effect of materials, now you have something that can self-generate.
What's the comet effect?
The comet effect is if you take a plasma that has a charge differential and you put an object in there, what's going to happen is it's going to discharge. A good example is the backyard bug killer, those zappers.
Right.
What happens is when the mosquito or bug flies in the grid, the discharge occurs along the bug, and that's the only place the discharge occurs.
Poor bug.
Exactly.
Poor bug.
Yeah.
But it does something else while the bug is in there, or if you have an object in outer space, it's not such a violent discharge. But it brings that the potential of that object up to a negative potential. It starts attracting all the positive ions and dust particles in the vicinity. And that's the comet effect, is that brings that material in, and visibly that's what we see as the comet tail.
So it pulls the material together. So you
it in from outer space from vast regions. So as
you would use this to pull together the raw materials that you need to build in space.
The hydrocarbons, the nitrogen, the oxygen, everything that you would use would come in by this method. It's basically a big vacuum cleaner, an electrical vacuum cleaner in space is a good way to put it.